The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Monday, everyone. And what a Monday it is. Today is one of those days where you would expect the universe to accomplish amazing things for a number of reasons. Let's start at the beginning. First of all, today is December 21st. It is the winter solstice. So spring has winter. Winter is here. You know, they say winter is coming. Winter has arrived. It is winter. It arrived on our doorsteps at 5:02 this morning, Eastern time, in case you're wondering. And but that's not all. You know, it is the winter. What is it? Solstice. So it is the shortest day of the year in terms of daylight hours, the longest night of the year. And what a good night for it to be the longest night of the year, because we want darkness tonight, because there's another celestial event happening. It's the Great Conjunction. And I'm not talking about, you know, ands and ors and things like that. I'm talking about celestial conjunction. It's what some will call the Christmas star, because obviously Christmas is 4 days away. It'll be visible in the night sky. And they're saying, at least here on the East Coast, it'll be shortly after sunset, you'll first be able to see it. And what you'll be able to see is Jupiter and Saturn. They are going to come the closest that they have been since like the 1200s, in 800 years. They will appear so closely aligned that they'll look in the sky like a double planet. And the fact that it's happening during the winter solstice is pure coincidence, or so they tell us. Because, you know, look, this is happening at a time when the world is in turmoil thanks to a global pandemic, and our nation is struggling through the final days of a mad president, and we're all kind of looking for something bigger to hold on to, right? I don't know. Louise O'Brien says in the chat room, bummed out because it's too cloudy in New York City to see the Saturn-Jupiter alignment. But I know you'll share something that enlightens you. I'll share something that enlightens. I'll look for it. I'll try to take pictures if we can see it. It's looking, it's clear here in Florida. So I will go out and look for it. I know at night we've seen it. And yes, I do answer emails too. I do. So that'll be interesting to see. I don't know what, you know, maybe this would be a really good time for those aliens to show themselves, because if ever we needed some otherworldly help, it's now. So the House of Representatives is allegedly debating the big package. Now, I won't call it a stimulus, because it's not a stimulus. It's a survival bill, because frankly, Congress has shirked on their responsibilities. It has been since March. March is when they last passed a big stimulus package, a relief bill. And here we are. So it's been, what, 9 or 10 months of Americans suffering, not only the primary effects of the coronavirus outbreak, but the devastating secondary economic effects. So over the weekend, Congress finally struck a deal on a $900 billion COVID relief bill. Last night, they passed another short-term continuing resolution to keep the government open today, because the one they passed on Friday expired last night at midnight. So they did another short-term one, because they bunched the COVID bill together with the omnibus bill that funds the government, or will fund the government, through September of next year. Now, I'm glad they're doing that, but really, they have to wait till the last fucking minute? They do this every year, so I'm not surprised. But it's not like they didn't have anything else coming up. Anyway, They were hoping to vote on it by, you know, the middle of the morning today, but they had no text. Well, guess what? Now they do. And I saw a picture of them wheeling it into the Capitol, and they had to wheel it because this thing is like over five. It's 5,593 pages. Isn't always the Republicans screaming about how big these bills are? 5,593 pages. And I just want to share with you something that is on page 5,099. I didn't read through it. Just I was alerted to this by a tweet from Lisa Desjardins from PBS. And on page 5,099, we see number four on line three. The 14th Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso, issued a statement on September 24th, 2011. Again, I'm reading from this, I don't know what they call it, the coronavirus relief bill of December 2020. Okay. The 14th Dalai Lama, explaining the traditions and spiritual precepts of the selection of Dalai Lamas, setting forth his views on the considerations and process for selecting his successor, and providing a response to the Chinese government's claims that only the Chinese government has the ultimate authority in the selection of the in the selection process of the Dalai Lama. Five, the 14th Dalai Lama said in his statement that the person who reincarnates has sole legitimate authority over where and how he or she takes rebirth and how that reincarnation is to be recognized. And if there is a need for a 15th Dalai Lama to be recognized, then the responsibility shall primarily rest with the officers of the Dalai Lama's Gaden Fodrang Trust, who will be informed by written instructions of the 14th Dalai Lama. So basically, this is giving instructions for the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama in this bill. Now, look, I guess this has to do with the Chinese government and their rule over Tibet and the United States saying, hold on a second, you have no authority to tell the Dalai Lama and the Tibetan Buddhist faith community how to do what they do. I'm good with that. But really, does it belong in this bill? You know, there's all kinds of stuff in here, including that it just doesn't make sense. But OK, there it is. Go figure. And again, leave the Dalai Lama alone. Let him or they reincarnate the way they do. Stay out of it. But I guess we want the Chinese government to stay out of it, too. But does it belong in this bill? That's my question here. Anyway, there's other stuff that is on my mind today. There's I don't even know where we go with this. Let me tell you who our guest is today, because as we get to the end of the year, usually, and I've been doing this for more years than I care to remember, but what I usually do at the end of the year is start looking back on the year gone by. Don't worry, don't panic. We're not doing a year in review, because the last thing I want to do is relive 2020. This has been the year from hell. This has been, what did I call it? The Peter year. You know, the Peter principle is if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. Well, this is the year of the Peter. And in a Peter year, I don't care. I'll let it just Peter out. I don't want to relive the Peter moments. So we will not be doing a year in review. But we will look back on some things that happened. For instance, my dear friend Jason Leopold has had great success and as a journalist in breaking stories and finding out information that we desperately need to know, that we deserve to know in a free and open society as we ostensibly live in. So Jason Leopold, a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News, keeps getting information from the government through his prodigious use of the Freedom of Information Act. And he had another big story just break this last week. So Jason Leopold will join us in the second half hour, and we'll talk about all the news he broke this year and stuff that happened in the purview of the Fourth Estate, and talk about how it's been maligned and how necessary the media, a free press, is to a free and open society. And we look at what the idiot in the White House has done to damage the press. And it's very dangerous as we move forward. We have people who just totally distrust the media, but will trust a con man and a grifter and a family of grifters over the word of, you know, the Fourth Estate. And that's very dangerous, precarious territory. Meanwhile, if not for the media, we wouldn't know that this afternoon, Donald Trump had a visit, I believe, in the Oval Office with a group of Republican congressmen and one congresswoman elect. Listen to this motley crew. Mo Brooks of Alabama, Matt Gaetz of Florida, Louie Gohmert of Texas, Jim Nasium Jordan of Ohio, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, the incoming congresswoman from QAnon and Georgia, were all in the Oval Office with Donald Trump today debating, talking about whether or not they should oppose certifying the Electoral College results before a joint session of Congress on January 6th. Everybody in that list has either endorsed a challenge to the Electoral College certification or said they're thinking about it. So they're actively plotting sedition. They're plotting to try to overturn a democratically elected president of the United States and a democratic election held in the United States of America. And of course, this comes after we learned from the New York Times of a meeting that got very contentious inside the Oval Office. I believe it happened on Friday night. This is Maggie Haberman speaking on CNN this morning about what happened in that meeting.
Even the mere possibility that the president was asking about military intervention is, of course, a big deal. We have had many fire alarms over 4 years, and I think, frankly, people have become numb to what they hear about this president doing. This meeting was different. It was different in part because of what he was saying, and in part because a number of people who are typically, you know, in the president's camp, who have been for a long time, who have favored a lot of his loyalty purges and so forth, were alarmed by what he was talking about, and that, I think, is something else that viewers ought to understand of what we're talking about. He also was pitched on this executive order that came up again at the White House last night about seizing voting machines to examine them. And he considered appointing Sidney Powell, who has made all kinds of wild and baseless claims about widespread fraud in the election, as a special counsel serving inside the White House. This was a many hours long meeting. People were screaming at each other. Basically, everybody was opposed to what Sidney Powell and Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, who called on the president to invoke the military on TV last week, was also present. This was a wild moment.
It was a wild moment, and I've just been corrected. I hate it when I get something wrong, but please correct me when I do, because the only thing worse than getting something wrong is knowing that you guys are sitting like yelling at your radios or computer going, "No, that's not it. Tell me." So Will from Chicago in the chat room on the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com explained to me that I got it wrong. The Peter principle is when one rises to the level of his incompetence. For instance, Donald Trump, I guess in this case, is Peter, because he rises to his own incompetence on a regular basis. What I'm talking about is Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law says what can go wrong will go wrong. So I'm wrong. This is the year of Murphy, not Peter. I think I got that right the last time I used that analogy. I'm just, you know. So it's the Murphy. It's the year of the Murph. So, you know, forgive me. And again, do correct me when I get something wrong. I hate being wrong. And I'm entirely fallible, and I am often wrong. But I'm one of those people who does admit when I get something wrong. So, yeah. Let me know. all right. So what else is going on? Oh, my goodness. All right. So the Trump thing is he's going further and further off the wall. It seems like the closer we get to January 20th, the more unhinged he becomes. But that, you know, that's implying that he's ever been hinged in the first place. And I don't think that he has. There's another controversy going on today, and that is the vaccines are rolling out. Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden got vaccinated today, as they should have been. But we've also seen a lot of members of Congress, both the House and the Senate, rolling up their sleeves and getting their shots. Now, some, like Ilhan Omar, will not take it. And the reason she's not taking it yet is she says, look, I'm young and I'm healthy. And I think every doctor, nurse and healthcare provider needs to take a shot, needs to get a vaccine before I get one. So I'm going to wait. There are others who are taking them. And for those representatives who have worked hard to get to this point, to try to take care of people, to encourage their constituents to be safe, to stay home, to social distance, to wear a mask, to be responsible in the face of this pandemic that's killed over 300,000 fellow Americans so far. Good for them. They're doing the right thing. What I have a problem with, and what so many others have a problem with today, are people like Little Macro. Yes, Marco Rubio, who has poo-pooed the mask wearing and the precautions people are taking. That's no big deal. You know, we'll survive. Joni Ernst, same thing. These people are getting vaccinated on television. And I'm sorry, that's hypocritical. You can't sit there and tell us for the last 7, 8, 9 months that it's like the flu. It's not a big deal. We can still gather. We can still have rallies. We can still party. Go out and eat. Go patronize your local businesses. And then they get a vaccine while people who are on the front lines, who are essential workers, who run the register at your grocery store so you can eat, they're waiting. That's not okay. But hypocrisy is the middle name of the Republican Party, the Republican Hypocrite Party. If they can call us Democrat, I can call them hypocrite. So a perfect example of their hypocrisy was verbalized on Friday. David happened to watch this segment on CNN. And actually, he called me in. He paused the TV so I could see it. And I watched it. And then I implored Brianna Keeler, who's actually really, really good. I'm liking her more and more there on CNN, to post this segment. And she did. And she calls out the rank hypocrisy on these Republicans. Now, remember, these are people who are so offensive in so many ways. They are offensive at every turn. And what are they freaking out about? That somebody, one of Joe Biden's press staffers, incoming press staffers, referred to in a print interview, I forget who it was with, but I'm sure we'll find out, referred to the Trumpers as those fuckers. Well, if the shoe fits. So CNN did post the segment, and you got to see it because it's just so typical. So these are the people who are going out there who've downplayed the effects of the coronavirus, but are cutting in line and getting their vaccine before you have a chance to. And worse yet, before the people who are putting their lives on the line every day so that you can get your groceries, can get your mail, can go to the doctor, can go to the hospital, can get treated if you get sick. This is what they're upset about. Take it away, Brianna Keeler.
Republicans who are rebuffing Biden's calls for unity while trying not to look like an obstinate brick wall. Senator Marco Rubio was among those offended. He tweeted that Biden talks about unity and healing, but you want to know what they really think? Read how the person he wants to be the next White House Deputy Chief of Staff called Republicans in Congress a bunch of effers. Yes, that would be the same Marco Rubio who insinuated that Donald Trump, and this was very publicly, has a small penis, and not in the context of arguing that they should work together.
You know what they say about men with small hands? You can't trust them.
Then there was White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, who called Dylan's comment sick and unleashed a torrent of exclamation points as she said, it says volumes about her boss who calls for unity while shouting that we are assaulting democracy. It is worth noting that Kayleigh's colleague, the White House social media director, posted a poop emoji on the president-elect's head this week on social media. But yes, these folks are outraged that an aide of Joe Biden swore and called Republicans a PG-13 name, which is an odd stance when you consider the language and behavior that they have excused or ignored from President Trump for years. The recording of Trump bragging about sexually assaulting women and grabbing them by the P word that nearly derailed his candidacy in 2016, it didn't stop him from spending his presidency name-calling and cursing prolifically in private and public some of the words that he has enjoyed using. Haters, losers, bastards, dummies, stupid, weak, pathetic, slobs, morons, crazy, very dumb, sons of bitches, assholes, bullshit, phonies, dope, sleazebag, flunky, psycho, and then this one that should really offend McEnany and Rubio by the standard that they set for this Biden aide. Quote, every time I speak of the haters and losers, I do so with great love and affection. They cannot help the fact that they were born effed up. Now, actually, to give these two credit, they were offended by the president's behavior, language, and pretty much his existence at one point.
Donald Trump has shown himself to be a showman. I don't think he's a serious candidate. The GOP doesn't need to be turning away voters and isolating them. We need to be bringing them into the tent. Donald Trump is the last person who's going to do that. To me, a racist statement's a racist statement. I don't like what Donald Trump said. I want to make clear I don't support what Donald Trump said. I think he said something very inartful, very inappropriate.
I don't care how many states I have to go to. I don't care how long this process will take. I will never allow a con artist to take control of the party of Lincoln and Reagan or of the conservative movement.
The nuclear codes of the United States to an erratic individual and the conservative movement someone who has spent a career sticking it to working people.
Donald Trump likes to sue people. He should sue whoever did that to his face.
Donald Trump has been perhaps the most vulgar, no, I don't think perhaps, the most vulgar person to ever aspire to the presidency in terms of how he's carried out his candidacy.
The party of Lincoln and Reagan is on the verge of being taken over.
He's such a piece of shit.
But perhaps one of the most hypocritical things about Republicans' faux outrage at Biden's campaign manager for cursing about them is that it fits a pattern of holding female Democrats to a standard they don't hold the president to. Just look at who else they've excoriated for cursing or using insults. Democratic Congresswomen Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib, the president-elect's pick for budget director Neera Tanden, whose confirmation is up in the air over, quote, her combative and insulting comments about many members of the Senate, according to Republican Senator John Cornyn, who, it's worth noting, ran an ad against his recent opponent, a former helicopter pilot who had been shot down by the Taliban during one of her three deployments to Afghanistan, for cursing.
We are going to kick some serious ass. You don't with Texas women.
Spineless is bootlicking.
I don't give a Are you
Then there's Senator John Cornyn's way. Treat people with respect.
Now, the message here from the GOP is clear. Boys will be boys, but women better not drop an F-bomb.
Well, that is, you know, that's true, right? I mean, that's how they roll. That is rank hypocrisy. Again, they're so insulted. They're so offended by MJ Hagar and by, you know, saying shit or whatever she said, and by a Biden staffer calling them fuckers. but this they had no problem with.
She was down in Palm Beach. I moved on her and I failed. I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and f- her. She was married.
Fuck her. He said, I did try and fuck her.
No, this was marriages, and I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping.
Okay, you know it. I don't have to play the whole thing. And when you're famous, you can do anything. Grab them by the pussy. And they're complaining that a Democrat used salty language. Go figure. I'm offended. I'm offended by everything they do, everything they say. By the way, let's change the subject because Jason Leopold is going to be joining us in a few minutes. Outgoing Attorney General William Barr had a press conference today. And he was asked, should there be a special prosecutor to look into Hunter Biden? He said, no, I don't see.
I think to the extent that there's an investigation, I think that it's being handled responsibly and professionally.
Oh, how interesting.
Currently within the department. And to this point, I have not seen a reason to appoint a special counsel, and I have no plan to do so before I leave.
Wow.
Yes.
On topic, what do you say?
And then, I don't know what it's, if the next question was about this, he was asked, should there be a special prosecutor to look into voter fraud, as Trump is alleging? And he said, no, I don't see any need for that either. oh my God, you might think Trump's going to fire him. Oh, except he's already been fired. So never mind. Where this is going, I have no idea. I just really don't. Hey, by the way, in case you hadn't heard, Trump signed another executive order. This one is a bit perplexing. This one mandates that classical architecture is the default style in Washington, D.C., and that all new federal construction be, quote, beautiful. I swear, it stopped short of a full ban on modern architecture that was debated earlier this year. And he wants to stay in office. This is a man who hasn't tweeted a word in his prodigious, mendacious Twitter stream about the fact that 300 and now almost 20,000 Americans have already died. No. All he does is tweet that the election was stolen from him. I haven't checked his Twitter feed lately. I don't follow him, but I do have a line, a column on TweetDeck just so I can see what kind of nonsense. Oh, he's still doing it. He said Wisconsin Republicans in Wisconsin should take these three strong decisions to their state legislators and overturn this ridiculous state election we won in a landslide.
Bullshit.
Yeah, no, you didn't. You lost. You're a fucking loser. Loser, Donald Trump. You're a loser. Go away. Let me check my countdown clock again. 29 days, 18 hours, 44 minutes, 40 seconds and counting. We do have a countdown clock. Two of them, actually, on the website at NicoleSandler.com. One on the homepage and the other one on the Listen Live page right below the chat. Well, I see our guest has arrived. He's a couple minutes early, and so I'm happy to bring him in early. So let's welcome Jason Leopold to the show. Hey there, buddy.
Hey, Nicole. How are you?
I'm surprisingly well, considering the insanity that we're living through.
I'm still trying to sort of grasp the concept that 2020 is coming to a close and that we made it through with that also made it, spent most of it indoors. I mean, it's just, it still feels surreal when you just look back on, the extent of the year.
Isn't that wild? I mean, March 22nd, before the pandemic, I was spending my weekends volunteering at the Broward County Animal Shelter, helping to get dogs. I worked with the dogs. They had cats, too, but I'm a dog person. Finding people, I'd spot a family coming in. And it's like, oh, I'm going to get them. And I got to know all the dogs because that's my thing. And I would try to match the right family with the right dog and get them adopted. That was what I loved doing. And March 22nd, we knew on the 21st, they shut us down early and we knew that the shutdown was coming. We went back on the 22nd, which was Sunday. And then at like 1 o'clock, they said, that's it. We're closed. Got to go. And they're still closed to volunteers. They're still doing adoptions, but you have to do it like by appointment and no volunteers are allowed. So since then, March 22nd, since then, I have been home except for the random occasional doctor's appointment or to walk Jackson occasionally around. That's it. David does all the shopping.
I've noticed, by the way, I wanted to compliment you on your very beautiful paintings.
Thank you.
I've been seeing you post. I didn't know that you were painting.
I wasn't. Jason, I picked up a paintbrush literally, yeah, for the first time in October, because I had nothing to do on weekends. And, you know, I could be cleaning the house and packing shit up and getting rid of things, but I'm domestically challenged. I'm not good at that stuff. So I just, on a whim, I bought this watercolor book, how to watercolor, like a book aimed at adults. And I thought, let me, you know, I have no artistic ability whatsoever. So I did that and I was having fun. And I thought, you know what? Watercolors are really hard. Let me try acrylics. And I bought a cheap acrylic set. And I did a couple of YouTube tutorials.
Wow.
And they came out good. And then I just started doing more and I started posting them. And then people were asking, oh, can I buy one? And then somebody asked me to paint her cat. And I'm like, I can't do that. And I said, but I'll try. Why not? I'll give it a shot. And then for those watching on YouTube, this is Buddy the cat. And
Wow, that's amazing.
Right?
Nicole.
On the left is the photograph, and on the right is the painting I did.
Yeah.
And then another friend saw it and said, do my dog. This is Char.
And that's the one that I saw.
And this is Char.
Or it was Harry Shearer's dog.
Shearer's dog. I don't have that up here. They got two beautiful chocolate lab puppies. And I'm like, okay, I want to paint your dogs. So I started doing this and now I have a little fledgling business. And let me put this out there to anybody. It's obviously we don't have time to do it before Christmas. But if somebody wants to give a pet portrait for the holidays, I'm making up like gift certificates. So just
really
send
cool.
me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. I'll talk to you about it. And you can give a certificate as a holiday gift. And I will paint your friends or your family pet portrait. I love doing it. My latest is, I didn't know you when I lived in L.A., but my dog Sandy was my first baby. She was everything to me. And she was with me when I went through the whole adoption process of my daughter.
Yeah.
And so I've been watching these videos. But this is Sandy. That's Sandy on the left, and that's her painting on the right. I'll post these on the blog for anyone who's only listening to the audio feed and going, I can't see the pictures. They're also posted on the website at NicoleSandler.com/pandemic-painting. So,
Very nice
anyway,
work. And I was super impressed. And I was like, when did I not know that Nicole, you know, was this great painter?
I never did before. So at 61 years of age, I discovered a new talent. And the best part of it, Jason, is that it's meditative. It's calming. I am a stressful person and I can't just sit and watch television. Right.
Yeah.
And it takes me out of my head and into this zone where I'm just looking at these animals and it's great. So there's my little commercial. But that's what I've been doing during this pandemic. It's a pandemic silver lining, I guess.
Nice.
So
what are you doing?
What are you doing to keep sane during this time?
What am I doing? I'm doing the same thing I normally do. It might go. I just am listening to tons of music, probably buying, you know, repurchasing all the vinyl albums that I sold 20 years ago, an idiot.
Right.
Reading books on music. As you know, I love music. So just kind of going back there, that's the place where I go to where I can kind of disconnect from, you know, from the world.
Gotcha.
From the shit that's happening.
I don't know if I've ever, I feel like it's shameless self-promotion, but what the hell. On my website, I have a whole page of music interviews. And
I've seen it.
Have you? So
I saw the picture that you, was it a picture of Yoko after John Lennon's 40th anniversary?
It was when the movie Imagine John Lennon was released. Yeah. And I worked at a station in L.A. at the time, KNX FM. And we spearheaded a campaign to get John Lennon a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which he didn't have one. So I got to meet Yoko. We actually interviewed her. I don't know. I don't have a tape of that anywhere, but I have the picture.
And then I read you like these diary entries when you went to Saudi Arabia.
It was 30 years ago.
Right.
With Mark and Brian. We went to Saudi Arabia.
That was great. That was really cool to read that.
Thank you. Well, I've got, but I've also got this page up at NicoleSandler.com. If you go to the homepage under Nicole Sandler Show, there's a whole bunch of stuff there. And one page is the music interviews. And for instance, back in the 90s, I did the very first Los Angeles radio interview with Dave Matthews, just as the Dave Matthews band was breaking. I did the first interview with Ben Folds Five. And these are with performances in the studio. I have David Byrne. I have
LOS.
No, this was at KSCA 101.9. And I didn't know you then. Ben Folds Five, Sting, Jackson Browne, Tom Petty, Greg Alexander of New Radicals.
Yeah.
So I have a bunch of them posted there, and they're all free. So if anybody who's a music fan wants to listen, just go to NicoleSandler.com under the Nicole Sandler Show. Explore. There's a ton of stuff, and I don't have a paywall up on my site. So go and enjoy. There's a holiday present for you. Anyway, Jason, I wanted to talk about you, not me. I always talk about you.
And by the way, what's the gold record you got behind you?
The one behind me. Let's see. Oh, to the right.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
That one is Lyle Lovett. The album is Joshua Judge's Ruth, which is awesome.
Album.
It is so good, and he signed it for me. But what you don't see is up there, I have a Warren Zevon, The Wind, which was his final album. And let me see if it's not...
For albums, so it's a gold record.
Yeah, well, here. This is a big one.
That's a good one.
And... this was his final album before he died. And there's a song on here called Keep Me in Your Heart that we played. I was on a station. It was Channel 103.1 at that time in L.A. And we were the only station playing it. But we played that one a lot. It's After I'm Dead. Keep Me in Your Heart for a while. And it was just heartbreaking, but a beautiful song. And it's somewhere on the interwebs. I was interviewed by Billboard magazine about us playing that song.
I remember that station.
Yeah,
it's gone through many incarnations here in L.A., but back in the 90s, that was a good station.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. KSCA was better because Channel 103.1 was Clear Channel. But here, Warren Zevon did a special show for listeners for us, and this was us sitting in the backstage room just shooting the shit. Yeah, so I have
that's
a bunch of,
cool.
Yeah, and I've got a few paintings back there, too. So
that's
anyway.
Anyway,
one of these days I'll let you interview me, Jace, although I think we just did. So I want to talk about you and what happened this week. So going back to you have stuff coming in. And I see piles behind you of papers.
Yeah.
You have FOIA requests that you filed years and years ago that you're now getting returns on. But you got one just last week from a year ago, right? Because it was a year ago that Trump was impeached. And you just got last week information.
Exactly. Yeah, it was odd in terms of when these documents arrived, because it was on the just around the anniversary of the impeachment. But right after the news broke that, Trump had this phone call with Ukraine President
Zelensky,
and the details of that phone call started to, surface in news reports. And then the White House, released their audio. I think it was the audio transcript of the call.
Yep.
All these stories started to, discuss this whistleblower's complaint. And one thing that was sort of buried within all of this was the fact that the intelligence community inspector general, where this whistleblower had filed a complaint about this phone call that took place in July 2019, there were these reports that said that there was a criminal referral filed with the Justice Department on Donald Trump, essentially saying that Trump may have committed crimes associated with this phone call. And then there was this news story about the ICIG, that's the Intelligence Community Inspector General. Michael Atkinson had filed a criminal referral with the Justice Department, and then the CIA's general counsel had done so. So I said, that's interesting. Normally my FOIA requests are very broad. I ask for everything. But this was one where I said to myself, let me just make it very, very narrow. ask for these criminal referrals, because those are damning, mm-hmm. and or could be damning, you know, depending on what it is. So I filed the request, and I also asked for any declination, you know, the reasons that, you know, any formal paperwork that the Justice Department had about declining to, you know, take up this criminal referral. So I filed the request. I ended up suing earlier this year, may have been around February or March. And unfortunately, due to the pandemic, you know, the agencies were not working on FOIA. You know, fast forward, you know, to last week, and these documents arrive. And, you know, at this point, they're certainly noteworthy because it still relates to the 2020 election, right?
Right.
What was Trump doing in this phone call? He was, you know, he was seeking help, seeking Zelensky's help for seeking foreign interference or foreign help for, you know, in the 2020 election. He wanted him to announce public investigations of Joe Biden.
Right.
So these documents arrive, and it was fascinating. You know, what was fascinating about it is that it was a criminal referral to the FBI. The FBI's counterintelligence division, and the Justice Department's criminal division. And, you know, the letter makes clear, this is a letter that was written by Michael Atkinson, makes clear that there are alleged crimes taking place as a result of this phone call. He believed it had merit. And so it talked about various conversations he had. And so this is the actual criminal referral on the president.
So then what happened with that? There's a criminal referral made, and then it just stops? It just dies?
Well, you know, this is the thing. We don't know. I actually do. I tried to find out. Don't know what happened with the FBI. Hmm. And what we do know is this, is that the Justice Department declined to investigate.
Of course they did.
Declined to, you know, take up this criminal referral. And that probably, you know, arguably at least, maybe ended anything that the FBI was doing, but not necessarily. I mean, the FBI could still have continued its investigation. I just don't have the details of it. But at this point, it becomes such an important historical document, such an important reminder. And to kind of, you know, detail for you how crazy it is in terms of just the news cycle that we're in. And it's like, I laugh at it. These documents arrive, Nicole. And, you know, my first thought in looking at it, I knew what it was because I knew what I asked for was, and even discussing it with my editors, like, oh, is there, you know, is there anything here worth reporting? Is there any news here? And then I had to stop and say to myself, hold on a second. This is a criminal referral on the president of the United States. I have to put this out there, you know, even if it's, you know, if there's nothing to it, and it's old news. It's a criminal referral on the president of the United States. This has not been released before. This has been discussed, but we've never seen the actual document. And so that's the kind of craziness that sort of exists, you know, or has existed. Particularly over the past few years, just with regard to all the, you know, the news coming out. And so it's funny. It's, you know, again, it's like you throw out the story on the criminal referral and, you know, it's not even the top news, but it's really, really noteworthy. The fact that it was sent to the FBI, we had not known about that before, had not known about any of the details that, you know, that were discussed. There was also another document in here that I also think is very important and was sent to the White House counsel by the Intelligence Community Inspector General that I wrote about in the story. And this was a document preservation letter. It essentially was telling the White House, you've got to preserve every document associated or connected or related to this phone call.
Right.
And turn it over. And it said that more or less failure to do so could you know, result in obstruction of justice charges or could rise to that sort of violation. And so that's another important document. And, you know, a national security analyst who I spoke with had said it's very noteworthy, that particular document, because you don't often see inspector generals going directly, you know, going after the White House because, right, you know, they can be fired.
Right.
And sure enough, that's what happened this year with Michael Atkinson. He was fired.
Yes, that's right. As someone in the chat room is asking, I know the answer to it. How redacted is it, Jason?
It's not redacted at all.
Really? I mean, oh, that one isn't. Wow.
There's a couple of names that are redacted. I mean, but you can read the whole letter. And, you know, and even the document preservation letter, it kind of just brings you to a place of a certain point in time. The date on the first letter, the criminal referral, is September 4th, 2019. So right after this had become sort of, you know, declared what's known as an urgent concern.
Uh-huh.
Right? That was a big thing that was a big sort of like controversy at the time is, you know, is this something that the intelligence community can, inspector general can even investigate? He determined that the complaint rose to the level of being an urgent concern, which led him to take action. So it really shows how noteworthy this was at the time, and how quickly they went and said, preserve all these records.
Right.
As we know, they didn't turn anything over to the House for the most part, you know, when that was requested. So, it's, as I mentioned, I think it also makes me, it leads me to believe that there's probably a lot of other documents that we don't have yet. You know, they're pieces to the puzzle.
Oh, I'm sure. But, you know, so Jason Leopold, we are coming up on the end of the year. And this year, you also did a lot of work that was under the radar for most of the year until, I want to say, a month or two ago when you broke the FinCEN file story. And this was and any other year, any time that Donald Trump wasn't president and we weren't fighting a global pandemic, this would have been front page news everywhere. And it was in a lot of places. This was a global story. And in fact, there's a big roundup that was just published a couple of days ago at the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists website, ICIJ.org. And the headline is, here's what's changing after the FinCEN files shook the world of banking. And it's got a nice long list of names in the byline there. So this was your project that you worked on for how long?
It was almost 2 years. And this was this story that you pointed out. This was a joint reporting effort with ICIJ, who is best known for the Panama Papers. Mm-hmm. They are the news organization that presented that to the world, along with their media partners around the world. So we published this on BuzzFeed. They published this on ICIJ. And, you know, since the investigation was published in September, the end of September, we have seen lots of activity taking place around the world, which we documented in this story, the various regulatory changes and investigations, and even the fact that the anti-money laundering legislation that was just passed, that ended up in the National Defense Authorization Act, the final push, you know, the publication of our series helped push that along, we were told by various lawmakers. So it's nice to see that kind of impact and coming, you know, particularly when it doesn't really specifically relate directly to Donald Trump in a sense, mm-hmm. right? We don't have Donald Trump's, you know, finances in there. I think I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you last time we spoke, but we did publish a couple of other investigations related to this. And some of the documents that we had were Michael Finn's suspicious activity reports. And
really?
Suspicious activity reports are what banks send to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network saying, you know, they're seeing possible evidence of money laundering and other financial crimes. Ooh. And so after he was fired, mm-hmm. Bank of America had sent the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is an agency within Treasury that investigates and is supposed to combat illicit financing. They sent them a suspicious activity report on Flynn Intel Group. And that was saying that there was, that report said that there was more than $500,000 in suspicious payments to Flynn coming from Turkey.
Oh, boy.
We published that in October, I believe it was. So it's been quite a year, and it's been amazing to see that impact.
Has anything come out of Deutsche Bank? Because we understand what the little we know about Donald Trump's finances is that Deutsche Bank is the one bank that continued to loan him money when others wouldn't. Was there anything in those files about his interactions with Deutsche Bank and the business they did with him?
There wasn't. And in fact, we searched, and it is curious as to why the Treasury Department has not received or does not have certain records on, on Trump or his businesses that, lay bare this kind of suspicion. Or document, the details that we've been hearing about with regard to Deutsche Bank. So unfortunately, that's just not there. But we're continuing to follow the money. And, this is something that I've been doing. It's, it's funny just thinking about not just the end of the year, Nicole, but the end of this administration.
Yes.
And, when I started at BuzzFeed News on the investigations team in 2017, just a couple of months into, Donald Trump's presidency, right? I started in January 2017. Wow. I was following the money.
Yeah.
And that, aside from all the other things that I've been doing on the, with the FOIAs and here and there, I have been following the money for, for 4 years.
So
and
then do
it's amazing.
Do you know where it's going to take us after he leaves office? Like, I know Letitia James, Attorney General of the State of New York, is ready. I know she's got stuff, and I know some other attorneys general do as well. Do you have any idea what's in store for him when he's a private citizen again?
I don't, and I certainly, like other journalists, and particularly also members of the public, will be watching closely, mm-hmm. and hope to dig into that quite a bit. Because that is really, when we are going to see whether or not the words, they put their money where their mouth is, or mm-hmm. whatever the cliche is you want to come up with.
Right.
These lawmakers, these law enforcement officials have been making, have been making pretty explosive statements about what they intend to do, or at least have suggested as much as with regard to Trump's finances and various investigations. I will be, interested to see if they actually, live up to that. There's certainly plenty to investigate, right? I mean, so, I am just reminded, after 2009, when Obama was elected, the calls to investigate, Bush administration.
Right.
By the way, I don't want this to come across as like, Obama's bad or things like that. This is not a partisan thing.
Right.
This has to do with the fact that there were, there was evidence of criminality, of wrongdoing.
Yep.
And they were all allegations at the time, but there was, certainly plenty that we started to see. It just never went anywhere, and it will be interesting. This is a different situation. Even though, George Bush, let's not forget, brought us to, into two wars, and one based on completely false pretenses. Oh, yeah. So.
Yep. Well, George Bush, I still believe, was a war criminal. I think he should have been brought to The Hague for a trial. And I think our government should have investigated him for war crimes, for lying us into a war. And Barack Obama famously said, we look forward, we don't look backward. He had a thing. He didn't want to go there. Joe Biden almost went there a couple of weeks ago, and then he sort of backtracked on it. He said, I'm not going to tell my attorney general what to do, what to say, what to investigate. I'm staying out of it. I hope that's true. And I hope Kamala Harris tells the attorney general, here's what you need to do. Because Trump cannot get away with this. I really believe that them not prosecuting George W. Bush for his crimes is what gave us Donald Trump. And if we don't prosecute Donald Trump for his crimes, the next Republican who cheats his way into office is going to be even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that is what is, you know, going to be very interesting. And, you know, there's, aside from just the investigations, I think that what is kind of important is, you know, is that we start, as journalists start investigating and surveying the damage.
Yeah.
You know, what was the damage that was, you know, that was done by this administration in certainly, you know, much of the same way that we kind of did that after Obama was elected in 2009, regardless of whether, you know, Obama at the time said, let's look forward and not backwards. I mean, it's still sort of, you know, we're obligated. I feel an obligation to do that, whether it's through the Freedom of Information Act and hopefully prying loose some documents, you know, using, for example, like the criminal referral. But that's going to be important. And I think that is what, you know, law enforcement officials will likely react to as well.
Well, I hope so. And I'm surprised I haven't seen what we're seeing. You know, I played a piece from CNN that aired on Friday when Breonna Keeler called out the Republicans for their hypocrisy over, you know, clutching their pearls over, oh, my God, one of the Biden staffers called them fuckers. Really? That's what they're upset about? Look at who you work for. Look at who's led you for the last 4 years. I would like to see a comprehensive piece of this is what Donald Trump and his administration did over 4 years. These are the norms he upended. These are the laws he broke. This is the shit he did that pushed the boundaries of legality and morality.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's going to take quite a bit of time to document all of that. You know, in ways, it's sort of like going into a war zone and just looking through the rubble, you know, and trying to make sense of everything.
Yep.
And honestly, as far as, you know, the Freedom of Information Act is concerned, I mean, this is where, you know, I will be using it, you know, in hopes of finding evidence of that.
What is your final impression of Bill Barr? His exit, his press conference today, I thought was interesting in that he said, no, there's no special prosecutor needed to investigate either Hunter Biden or the election. There's nothing there. There's no there there. After that fawning resignation letter that I believe Trump himself wrote, what do you have any idea what unfolded there in the final days?
You know, I don't, but as you can imagine, I'm trying to
find out,
you know, find that out and, you know, see if there's certainly any emails or documents about it. I mean, you know, in some ways it feels like is Barr trying to, you know, repair his reputation in any way, shape or form by not going out with this administration, not sort of like, you know, going down with them. I don't know. It's certainly curious because it's only a month.
Right.
It's less than a month.
Yeah.
You know,
or was he fired? I think he was fired. He was told you're leaving. You contradicted me. I don't want you here. I'll let you resign as long as
that letter though.
But he didn't write it. I think Trump wrote it. He said, you can sign this and I'll let you resign. Otherwise you're fired.
It's
I mean,
I'm certainly curious about it.
Good.
You can find out.
I look forward to seeing what you find out. Jason Leopold, you are the best. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Find Jason at BuzzFeedNews.com, at Jason Leopold on the Twitters. And I love your specials t-shirt. We've been singing a message to you, Rudy, around here as his, you know, face melts in front of us and all that. Jason, if I don't talk to you, happy holidays. Happy New Year.
And
I can't wait to see you again one of these days. Soon.
I know.
Hopefully. Beautiful. All right.
Music
Love
again.
You, honey. Take care. Beautiful. Bye, everyone. Bye. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.